The circle of life turning, much like the wheel of the year. For those of us who practice an earth-based tradition, prepare and surrender again and again is a part of our every ritual. Releasing past and bidding it fond farewell as we prepare the way to the new beginning. That change that is brought to us as we acknowledge the changing of the season and the turning of the wheel. However, some sermons write themselves, and before I talk anything about what pagan practices are, I have to be clear about some origins and things that I find very ironic and can't seem to let go of. First of all, unlike the traditions Matthew has brought you over the last few weeks, pagans do not have one belief system in common. There's no single agreed upon text, tradition, image of God or goddess that holds the pagan practitioners together in a whole. There's no way for you to know what type of pagan I am. And in reality, even if I gave you more information, it would be a substantial conversation and a substantial amount of time before you had a general idea of my practice. So in this way, we pagans often agree that the use of the title of pagan as an earth-based tradition is at least a shortcut and an acceptable way of informing others that we don't share their faith tradition. And in that moment, we have to let go of the idea that sharing our faith practice with others and what that might look like, because it might not be interesting. It might not be accepted without judgment. And it might not be important, an important part of the information that anyone wishing to know us needs. We surrender a part of ourselves to the idea of not rocking the boat, not always being the stranger in the room. When in fact, the term pagan in its definition is ever changing with society. Pagan simply means a person who holds a religious belief other than those in the main world religions. The main world religions. Maybe not the main ones, but the dominantly voiced religions in immediate power structure. And you might think, what is the difference? So today's pagan community has a much larger umbrella for a wide variety of practitioners. So much so that there are those out there who haven't had a wide enough worldview that they lump everyone that doesn't believe what they believe, primarily an Abrahamic faith tradition, that of the Christian Muslims of Jews, into this umbrella of paganism. In the current American view of what is dominant, I will have to admit it is a way of othering, of oppressing anyone who doesn't practice the current dominance. And as you can tell, that's complicated. It's complicated, so instead of trying to unravel all the things that are incorrect or flat out wrong about pagans, I would insist instead to point out a few more ironies. In the first and second century, when the center of the cultured world was focused on Greece and Rome, there was a pantheon of gods and goddesses to whom people paid their respect and worshiped. And there was civil tax laws that not only required that you pay obeisance to a ruler, but that you also pay obeisance to those gods. And if you were a person who did not show such observances, you were called a pagan, one who didn't follow the dominant sanctioned religious practices. So, if you were living in the year 177 CE, and the state came to you and asked you to denounce your pagan god, and you refused, you'd be marked a pagan and sent to the arena for sport. You became a toy for wild animals, possibly dinner. Either way, you weren't leaving the arena alive. These first and second century pagans have another name today. They're Christians and Jews. Unless these early Christians and Jews would denounce the Abrahamic God and Jesus and participate in the sacrifice to the pantheon of gods, they'd be executed for being a heathen, an infidel, a heretic, an idolater, all terms used synonymously with pagan. This form of denouncing one's faith doesn't really seem all that far away to me. You see, I was raised Christian, and within my church, I was allowed a wide curiosity of liberal thought. I loved the church. I especially loved ritual, even the really, really dark rituals. I especially loved this one particular ritual morning of Good Friday. A large cross was hung over the chancel, way up high, so that it cast a shadow down the center aisle. I remembered how this disturbed so many people around me. I love the ritual effect of recognizing the dark looming. And somehow I knew then that the only way out to the new day was through the darkness. What I didn't realize was that my reason for my curiosity, that my belief did not reside purely in Christianity and the story that Jesus was the only way, but more that I'm a ritualist who collects stories as a way to find hope in the darkness. I've always looked for ways to surrender my own failing, my own imperfections, all as a part of the circle of life. Not in a defeatist way, but in a healthy letting go that no longer serves, gets let go before we greet what is new. So I let go of being a Christian, not from a place of hurt, but a surrendering to the way that called to me as a pagan ritualist. If that makes me a heathen, an infidel, a heretic, or an idolater, then I claim my paganism like many others. A badge of honor. It's a term of empowerment. And still I find an irony in the American definition and the use of the pagan title. Because if the American definition is true, then the majority of the world is pagan by not being an Abrahamic tradition. At least on the surface, I guess, Christians, Jews, and Muslims carry and claim the same God and can be called one people. But religions like Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism, Shinto, Zoroastrianism, Baha'i, and even atheists are often pushed under the umbrella of pagan, even as they're recognized as major world religions. As of late, we've seen many traditions raising their voices, no longer willing to be overlooked and thought of as less than. Indigenous religions, religious practices belonging to the people of the land, have begun to have their religious identities recognized more fully, their practices open to the public. People that are indigenous to the Americas and the islanders around have been more forward and open with what their practice might look like. People displaced from their lands, whether by war or slavery, have started looking back to reclaim and embrace their religious traditions of origin. I believe it's in this recognition of the other that we affect change. We are destabilizing the supremacist umbrella that, in fact, has always been used, regardless of its definition, as an effort to erase and oppress people. Now, because of the derogatory and often dangerous implications of being some animal's lunch, people who have claimed the term have often hidden their practices, often in plain sight, or they've helped that their pagan practices become incorporated, surrendering their outward practice to the dominant world religions and society at large. Thus, we have Yule and winter solstice becoming Hanukkah and Christmas, Imbolc and the promise of spring becoming St. Bridget's Day, Ostara and the spring equinox becoming Passover and Easter, Beltane and the festival of fire becoming May Day, Lammas and the celebration of the first harvest becomes Labor Day, Samhain and the witch's new year becomes Halloween. And there are so many more where we have traded our traditions to others so that they can live. But in each of those holidays or celebration comes a time of preparation, a time when we clean the hearth and reset the altars, regardless of tradition. It's a time that we let go of things that no longer serve. And in letting go, we move forward to the new day. This cycle, or the turning of the unending wheel of the year. Even those who are unaware of pagan holidays participate. How many of you change the decor of your house based on the season and upcoming holiday celebration, even if it's not your own? But practitioners of earth-based religions, in their practice of letting go, practice this far more often than on the holidays. They do it every time they cast a circle or pray. Every time we create sacred space, we ask for our gods and our goddesses to attend us at their will. Hence the opening hymn this morning. We release and thank them for their presence as a part of the opening of the circle, which is actually our closing ritual. There is a knowing in our practices, a knowing that we will be given what we need, and therefore we can release and let go what we have, because it will come to us again. This type of surrender to the fates, the gods and the goddesses, the universe, reminds me most of the saying, if you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, it's yours. If not, it was never meant to be. I don't hear that earth-based practitioners are superior at letting go. We are far from that. We are human after all, and we fail in our abilities to live as our best selves, like anyone else. So as we wait for the melting of the snow and the coming of spring, as you excitedly plan the garden or anxiously clean your home, as you practice your own faith tradition, your own spiritual practice, and celebrate the seemingly benign holiday, think of the letting go. Look deeper into your spiritual roots. Think of what influence in ancient practices has been incorporated over the years, and what gods or goddesses or spirits of fate that you might want to recognize as an ancestor or pay homage to. The wheel of life is ever turning. And so we have the opportunity to open our minds, our spirits, and our hearts to embrace the seeing of the so often unseen diversity in our midst and in ourselves. May we be willing to destabilize supremacy and welcome the wholeness and the divine in each other and surrender. May it be so. I don't think there would be a more appropriate closing hymn. So please rise in body or spirit as we sing Blue Boat Home. In a moment, I will extinguish the chalice and then read our benediction, and we'll sing our closing blessing. But now, as a congregation, I invite you to do one of three things. If you'd rather not be touched by others, please cross your arms across your chest. If you've overcome an illness and want to be touched, hold your hands together or reach out to those around you. I'll now extinguish our chalice. But not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Today, our benediction is to release the spirits that we called in during the opening hymn. Guardians of the north, element of earth and power of body. Guardian of the east, element of air and power of mind. Guardians of the south, element of fire and power of action. Guardians of the west, element of water, power of emotion. We thank each of you for the wisdom you bring. Go if you must, stay if you will. Above us, we reach for the sky and the cosmos, below us, the earth and this sacred space. Within us, the spirit of the divine soul, all in perfect balance, in reverence of the great mystery. Go if you must, stay if you will. Blessed be, ho. Now let us sing together our closing hymn.